It is Monday, June 1st. This is VOA's International Edition. Coming up, the U.S. Senate debating the nation's surveillance bill.
How this will play out from a national security perspective and from a civil liberties perspective remains to be seen.
We'll also look at violence in elections in Burundi, plus trying to keep people from smoking. Hello, everyone. I'm Steve Norman. The U.S. Senate, in an unusual Sunday into Monday session, debated whether to extend its authorization of the country's vast national security surveillance operation or let it lapse at midnight under the current law. Lawmakers gathered in Washington just hours after the U.S. intelligence chief warned that global terrorists are looking to take advantage of any halt in the spying effort. For more on the story now, we turn to VOA Senate correspondent Michael Bowman.
Steve, the Senate was facing a real conundrum in that it had not acted at all as far as the National Security Agency's ability to collect Americans' telephone records for the fight against terrorism. The House had voted to reform the program and to have all Americans' telephone records kept by telecommunications companies. In other words, under corporate server control rather than the government servers. But the Senate had not acted at all. And without some action by Congress to reform the program, the U.S. government was facing the possibility that no telephone records at all were going to be kept by any entity whatsoever. And the Obama administration had warned that that would cause a real potential problem in terms of defending the nation. So the Senate was really under the gun. Both houses of Congress were in recess this past week. The Senate came back a day early, and moments before the midnight expiration of this program, the Senate voted to begin debate on the House-passed bill. This is a bill that the Senate had rejected just over a week ago, and the Senate's Republican majority leader had held out, hoping that the Senate would vote to extend the NSA's snooping abilities, if you will. But that did not hold, and so now the Senate has voted to at least consider the House bill, and that is expected to go to final passage possibly later today, Monday, or if not Tuesday.
You know, Michael, we've been at this juncture before on a number of issues where the lawmakers just don't know what to do, it seems. Is that another one of those cases where the Senate is just so completely divided that they can't move forward?
It's not that they don't know what to do. It's that there are different factions that have very different ideas about what should be done. For Mitch McConnell, he would have wanted the existing program, the program that the NSA had for years, to continue. There was another faction that wanted it reformed, that wanted those phone records to still be kept, but just not under the government's control. Then you have a third faction that does not think that the bulk collection of telephone records in any capacity is something that should be done in a country that values civil liberties and the privacy of individual Americans. So there was this gridlock in Congress, and specifically in the Senate. The House had voted overwhelmingly on a bipartisan basis to embrace the reform proposal, what's called the USA Freedom Act. But it was really in the Senate, which has been called the world's greatest deliberative body, where things were falling apart. Now it seems that the two houses of Congress, both under Republican control, are at least on the same page. So some might say that that at least constitutes some form of progress.
Well, whatever happens with the USA Freedom Act, it likely will not come easy, will it?
Well, it could come easy if the Senate goes ahead and votes within the next day or two. Then the House bill will have been passed, and it will go to President Obama's desk for his signature. I should say that it's not entirely clear how this will play out from a national security perspective. If you have these telephone records kept by private telecommunications companies, will that make it more difficult for the federal government to monitor things and to keep on top of possible terrorist plots? Could there be possible security breaches if these phone records are kept by telecommunications companies? The way forward is a bit murky, and how this will play out from a national security perspective and from a civil liberties perspective remains to be seen.
And many thanks to you, Mike. That's VOA Senate correspondent Michael Bowman. It's time now for Michael Lippman's look at what's happening in the world of social media.
Thanks, Steve. Our lead web story today has been on the fate of the NSA surveillance program. That web article, titled U.S. Senate Starts Debate Over National Security Surveillance, has had more than 700 recommends and shares on Facebook. It's also had dozens of retweets, including from Twitter user KU Mixlab. That user pointed out the unusual political alliances that have emerged in the fight over the NSA surveillance powers, including one alliance between the American Civil Liberties Union, a left-wing group, and the conservative Tea Party movement. KU Mixlab tweeted, "Who would have thought it? The ACLU and the Tea Party joining hands against the renewal of post-9/11 surveillance measures." Our readers also have been leaving comments at the bottom of the web article. Steve from North Carolina said this: "No to NSA spying on American citizens, and no to Obama and Bush, who have been violating the constitutional rights of Americans." Another reader disagreed with that view. Efrain Sierra from the town of Racine, Wisconsin said, "We should make sure to act on the NSA program. We need to keep an eye on those people." I was also looking at what folks were saying about the NSA issue on Twitter, and one tweet that caught my eye was from American journalist Glenn Greenwald. You may recall that Greenwald broke the story for The Guardian newspaper about former NSA contractor Edward Snowden, who leaked the documents that revealed the NSA phone data collection program to the world. Greenwald has been a staunch supporter of Snowden, whose revelations prompted Senator Rand Paul to wage a campaign against the NSA program. Using Twitter handle @GGreenwald, the journalist highlighted Senator Paul's argument that there is one way for the U.S. to keep conducting terrorist surveillance without the NSA provisions in the Patriot Act, and that is by getting a warrant. And then Greenwald emphasized his point by adding the hashtag radical. That bit of sarcasm is his way of saying it should not be a radical step for U.S. authorities to get a warrant before they spy on Americans' phone calls. Steve, back to you.
And many thanks to you, Michael. That's VOA's Michael Lippman. Security dominated the Shangri-La dialogue in Singapore over the weekend, specifically security surrounding the debate over controls of the South China Sea. On Saturday, U.S. Defense Secretary Ashton Carter delivered a blunt rebuke to China.
There should be an immediate and lasting halt to land reclamation by all claimants. We also oppose any further militarization of disputed features. We all know there's no military solution to the South China Sea disputes.
Mr. Carter said China is out of step with international norms amid their unprecedented pace of island reclamation. On Sunday, Chinese Admiral Sun Jung-kuo told the security summit that China's island building is justified, legitimate, and reasonable. EU Foreign Policy Chief Federico Mogherini also spoke at the conference.
When some decide to play by their own rules, cooperation gives way to confrontation. And in today's world, that is bad news for everyone. The same applies to maritime disputes, too. We need to maintain a maritime order based on international law, including the UN Convention on the Sea, on the Law of the Sea. We are not getting into the legitimacy of specific claims, but we are resolute as Europeans on how this should be resolved. That is, peacefully, without the use or threat of force.
Mogherini's words were echoed by Australia's Defense Minister Kevin Andrews, who called on all parties involved in the South China Sea to manage their disputes so freedom of navigation and trade are ensured. China insists it has sovereignty over nearly all the resource-rich South China Sea, a major global shipping route. The Philippines, Vietnam, Malaysia, Taiwan, and Brunei also claim parts of the sea. This is VOA.
Hashtag VOA. It's a weekly show, Tuesdays at 1730 UTC, where we bring you the top topics of the week. But the show lives on social media every day with your daily video shorts, What's Trending Wednesday, and the Friday Fast Five. Subscribe to the show at YouTube. You can find us at hashtag VOA. You can reach me at Twitter, at Perry Cal, or talk to the show anytime. Please don't forget to like us on Facebook. We like to be liked. We love to be seen. And you can reach us anytime.
Could be French,
English,
Portuguese,
Bantu,
Arabic, etc.
It is the beat.
The African beat that counts.
The beat does all the translations.
It cuts across all languages and gives us the understanding that this is the African beat.
It is so distinct.
And adhesive.
It binds us together.
African beat on The Voice of America. Mondays through Fridays, 0900 and 2000 Universal Time.
With David Bandy.
Listening to VOA's International Edition. The United States' official removal of Cuba from its list of state sponsors of terrorism being celebrated back in Cuba and welcomed by many Americans. The move brings in two Cold War adversaries a bit closer to reestablishing diplomatic relations that were severed more than 50 years ago. VOA's Zod Zahok reports the U.S. trade embargo against Cuba remains in place, though, until Congress decides otherwise.
The United States announced the decision Friday, saying it is effective immediately. For many Cubans, the decision means righting a long-time injustice.
We have always fought for peace, for solidarity. It was an injustice to put us on this list. Now there is justice.
Cuba has always been affected by terrorism, not to sponsor, not to put bombs anywhere. Therefore, it does not deserve to be on the list.
Luckily, they realized, they opened their eyes, that we are not bad.
Cuba was placed on the list in 1982 for aiding rebel movements in Africa and Latin America. But Havana long ago said it had ceased supporting foreign insurgencies. Cuban President Raul Castro made the removal a key condition for restoring diplomatic relations with Washington. Some U.S. lawmakers oppose rapprochement with the communist country.
It is a victory for the oppressive Cuban government, but a serious setback for the repressed Cuban people.
But after several meetings with U.S. officials, Cuba's government in March allowed the launch of the island's first known free public internet service at a Havana Cultural Center.
Hopefully, the cost of communications in Cuba will go down thanks to these new doors opening, and that will permit this country to do many more things.
The ease of travel restrictions has enabled reunions of family members separated for many years, and it has enabled this American artist to participate in an international art festival in Havana. Duke Riley's creation consisted of releasing 500 pigeons with lights strapped to their feet. Zlatica Hoke, VOA News, Washington.
And there was some sad news here in Washington over the weekend. The son of Vice President Joe Biden died. Beau Biden, the 46-year-old former Attorney General of the state of Delaware, died on Saturday. The Vice President's oldest son also served in the military for 1 year in Iraq. Vice President Biden said in a statement that it is with broken hearts that he and his family announced the passing of our husband, brother, and son, Beau, after he battled brain cancer with the same integrity, courage, and strength he demonstrated every day of his life. Beau Biden had been receiving treatment for the disease this month at Walter Reed Army Medical Center. That's just outside of Washington, D.C. President Obama said, and I quote, Beau was a good, big-hearted, devoutly Catholic, and deeply faithful man who made a difference in the lives of all he touched and in the lives, and he lives on in our hearts, as President Obama put it. And Betsy Palmer, the American veteran character actress, has died, age of 88. She appeared in many films on Broadway, and of course, she'll be remembered for the golden age of television back in the 1950s. Still ahead on VOA, an updated world news with Ray Kugel. Hope you'll stay tuned. I'm Steve Norman in Washington.
Here are the headlines from VOA. The U.S. National Security Agency has lost the legal authority to collect telephone records after the Senate failed to agree Sunday on an extension of several provisions put in place following the September 11, 2001 terror attacks. The Senate did not approve the measure before the surveillance program expired at midnight Sunday, but could still pass the bill later this week. East African community leaders say Burundi elections should be delayed at least 6 weeks. Following an emergency regional summit in Tanzania Sunday, they also called on all parties to stop the violence. Burundi President Pierre Nkurunziza did not attend the meeting. Five people were killed near the Libyan city of Misrata Sunday in a suicide car bombing. The Islamic State militants claim responsibility. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry will remain in a Geneva, Switzerland hospital overnight after breaking his leg in a bicycle accident Sunday. A full recovery expected and back home to the U.S. Monday. I'm Ray Kugel, VOA News.
This is VOA News, and we are in Washington. Good to have you with us. Going to continue along with what Ray was talking about regarding Burundi. East African community leaders who did meet in Tanzania on Sunday called on authorities in Burundi to delay this month's elections at least 6 weeks following weeks of violent protests following President Pierre Nkurunziza's decision to seek that third term. More than 20 people have died in the clashes with police. Richard Sazibera is a Secretary General of the East African community.
The summit concerned at the impasse in Burundi and the need for further dialogue called for a longer postponement of the elections in Burundi for a period not less than 1.5 months. Summit appeals to institutions of Burundi, including its parliament, to facilitate this postponement.
He also called on all parties to halt the violence for the disarming of youth militia.
The summit calls on all parties to stop violence and exercise restraint during this period. The summit calls for urgent disarmament of all armed youth groups allied to political parties in Burundi.
Burundi's foreign minister represented the country as President Nkurunziza did not attend the meeting of leaders and ministers from Kenya, Rwanda, Tanzania, Uganda, and South Africa. President's critics say a third term would violate the Constitution. His supporters say he is eligible to run because Parliament, not voters, elected him to his first term in 2005. Burundi's Catholic Church has withdrawn support for the presidential election scheduled for June 26 and asked the clergy to step down from electoral commissions. European Union is suspending its election observer mission in Burundi because it says the election process has been marred by restrictions on independent media, excessive use of force against demonstrators, a climate of intimidation for opposition parties and civil society, and a lack of confidence in the election authorities. The political opposition recently broke off peace talks after opposition party leader Zedi Feruzi and his bodyguard were killed in a shooting in Bujumbura. U.S. has condemned the killings and urged Burundian authorities to arrest the perpetrators and protect other politicians. Egyptian-American Mohamed Soltan is back in the United States after being freed for more than a year in prison on charges of financing an anti-government sit-in and spreading false news during the ouster of Islamist President Mohamed Morsi in 2013. Before being freed, Soltan had to renounce his Egyptian citizenship. He had been on a hunger strike and returned to the U.S. in a wheelchair. His father, Salah, a prominent member of the Muslim Brotherhood, has been sentenced to death. The United States welcomed Soltan's release. Five people were killed, several wounded Sunday near the Libyan city of Misrata. in a suicide bombing claimed by Islamic State militants. Misrata is aligned with the unofficial government and controls the capital, Tripoli. Islamic State supporters have claimed multiple attacks throughout the country since last year, including the highly publicized beheadings of foreign workers. In the northeast city of Maiduguri on Sunday, a bomb exploded in a marketplace, wounding several people. That's in Nigeria, a day after nearly 30 were killed in an attack near the city and a mosque. The militant group Boko Haram is suspected in both attacks following Friday's inauguration of President Muhammadu Buhari, who has vowed to crush the Islamist insurgency. Maiduguri, capital of Borno State, is viewed as the birthplace of Boko Haram, which launched a bloody insurgency in 2009 that's left more than 15,000 people dead. And more than 5,000 migrants have been rescued in the Mediterranean. At least 17 aboard a rubber dinghy perished. Tens of thousands of migrants from the Middle East and Africa have braved the dangerous journey in overcrowded and often unseaworthy vessels to escape poverty, persecution, and war in a search for a better life in Europe. The European Union launched a massive rescue effort after hundreds of migrants perished in one incident off the Libyan coast in April. This year's Africa Day, the African Ambassadors Group to the U.S. held a series of events highlighting the progress the continent has made with all the challenges that lie ahead. We get more now from VOA's Mariama Diallo.
From traditional dances from Rwanda and Ivory Coast to a whirling dervish, an Egyptian folk dance, to Nyawa music from Morocco, it was a night of celebration. Mohamed Taufik is Egypt's ambassador to the U.S. and co-chair of this year's event.
What is particularly important is that Africa is succeeding. Africa is on the rise.
Ambassador Rashad Bouhlal from Morocco says this year's theme about empowering African women is of the essence.
Women in Africa are extraordinary. We just need to give them opportunities.
In Washington, Mariama Diallo, VOA News.
This is Science in a Minute. I'm Rick Pantaleo. NASA plans to build on the success of its Curiosity rover mission with its next Mars lander mission called Interior Exploration using seismic investigations, geodesy, and heat transport, or InSight for short. NASA recently announced that testing has begun at its jet propulsion laboratory on the InSight mission's stationary lander, which is scheduled for launch in 2016. The InSight mission will be the space agency's first mission that will be devoted to exploring the interior structure of Mars. Scientists hope InSight will provide some evidence about the formation and evolution of all rocky planets, including our own Earth. Unlike Curiosity and other Mars rovers such as Spirit and Opportunity, the InSight lander will not roam across the red planet, but instead remain in a fixed position throughout its mission. And that's your Science in a Minute.
Sunday was World No Tobacco Day, a day for smokers to think about their habit and to give it up, even if only for a day. VOA's Carol Pearson looks at some of the strategies that help people quit smoking.
It's no secret that any type of tobacco use is not healthy. But for most people, it's hard to quit. That's because most of them started the habit as teenagers and because tobacco contains nicotine.
Nicotine is a highly addictive, very powerful drug.
Dr. Kimberly Horn says teens are likely to use more than one form of tobacco. It could be cigarettes, small cigars, or smokeless tobacco. And teens who smoke are likely to use electronic cigarettes, which also deliver nicotine.
The more nicotine that I get, the more addicted I am, the more difficult it is for me to quit.
There is no one technique for quitting that works for everyone. Some turn to e-cigarettes for help. Cece is hoping electronic cigarettes can help her kick the habit.
After many years of smoking, I really don't like the smell of smoke. I don't like the mess of cigarette butts. I don't like the taste that it leaves in my mouth. And I don't like the fact that other people are going to be bothered by the tobacco smoke.
Studies show electronic devices can work for some people, but not for others. Behavioral therapy and medicine, gum and patches that reduce nicotine cravings might help. Dr. Nancy Rigotti and other researchers designed a simple program to help smokers quit while they were in the hospital and stay smoke-free after they were discharged. Patients were given a nicotine patch or medication and counseling in the hospital with follow-up support after they left.
We know that medication works and that counseling works, but they both together work much better than either one alone.
70% of smokers in that program were still smoke-free 6 months after leaving the hospital. The U.S. government and private organizations have been running anti-smoking campaigns since 1964. A study from the Yale School of Public Health found that those who quit during this time period had a 30% improvement in life expectancy. Dr. Theodore Holford is one of the co-authors. He and others who study tobacco use have this advice.
Someone who's considering smoking should not consider it ever.
Both studies were published in the Journal of the American Medical Association. Carol Pearson, VOA News, Washington.
And from the world of entertainment, pop singer Enrique Iglesias is recovering from, well, after some of his fingers were sliced when he grabbed a drone. It's a drone with a camera on it flying around his concert during a concert. That was in Tijuana, Mexico. Representative of the singer said in a statement to the Associated Press that Iglesias was semi-treated, whatever that means, after the accident at the side of the stage. To stop the bleeding, he was advised to end the show. He did not. He went on to perform an additional 30 minutes. Concert goers at the Plaza de Toros de Playas posted photos of social media. 40-year-old Iglesias was there, blood all over his white T-shirt. Any way you look at it, he's still performing. The next stop on his current tour will be in July in Mexico City. Many thanks, everyone, for tuning in today to The Voice of America, an international edition. It's always good to have you with us. Hope you'll stay tuned. The latest world news is coming up shortly. For our director, Tracy Carter, and engineer, Jim Harmon, I'm Steve Norman in Washington. Have a great Monday.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
ISIL makes life hell for women and girls throughout Iraq, said U.S. Ambassador at Large for Global Women's Issues, Catherine Russell. The situation for minorities is especially grim. Thousands of Yazidi girls and women were abducted by ISIL last summer. Throughout their captivity, many of these girls, some as young as 7 or 8, were repeatedly raped and forced to marry ISIL fighters. Several said they had attempted suicide during their captivity or witnessed suicide attempts to avoid rape, forced marriage, or forced religious conversion. Some have been sold as slaves and transported to various locations in Iraq, Syria, and beyond. ISIL has publicly acknowledged enslaving women and children, claiming in its online English language magazine that it was reviving a custom justified under its interpretation of Sharia law. The hundreds of women and girls who have returned from ISIL captivity continue to suffer, said Ambassador Russell, following a recent visit to Iraq. Iraqis she met with characterized some of the returned women and girls as emotionally broken, some still wearing the same clothes they had on during captivity. The Yazidi women and girls who escaped ISIL still face enormous challenges and trauma from their experience. The medical and psychosocial services available to meet the growing need of the displaced community are limited. The United States has taken action to help, providing both humanitarian aid and other assistance spanning several sectors. The United States is also committed to continuing its work with the government of Iraq, non-governmental organization partners, and the UN to address the needs of those who are affected by ISIL's aggression in Iraq. But the needs are huge, and the international community needs to do more to protect and better serve women and girls affected by the conflict, said Ambassador Russell. The ultimate answer is to defeat and destroy ISIL, and support the women and men of Iraq in rebuilding their country. The United States and Iraq remain committed to that goal by continuing U.S. and coalition airstrikes and enhancing Iraqi defense capabilities through training and equipment.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. For a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email, visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage at www.voanews.com/editorials.
It's 4.